Welcome to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Jody Peterson. Summer is in full swing here in western Colorado. After a cool, wet spring, we're enjoying the warmth and sunshine, playing outdoors, having barbecues, going swimming. But there's one sound of summer that nobody wants to hear. Mosquitoes are not just a nuisance. They can also carry diseases that affect people, birds, horses, and other animals. On the western slope, the most serious of those diseases is West Nile virus. Most people who get West Nile think they just have a summer cold, and usually they get better within a week or so. But every now and then, West Nile turns into a really nasty illness that can result in paralysis and brain swelling. It can even be fatal in a few rare cases. In this edition of Local Motion, I'll be talking to someone who survived the worst form of West Nile. And experts will tell us how to best protect ourselves and our families from mosquito bites. Finally, we'll hear from a professor who's written a new book about the ways mosquitoes, and the diseases they carry, have shaped human history. Stay tuned. I first spoke with John Vandenberg, a resident of Peonia, who contracted West Nile last fall. He described his experience and the group he's helped form to support people with the disease.
Last September 7th, felt like I had the flu, but then I passed out in my living room on the floor and didn't remember anything for a couple months. I became unconscious and had to be taken to the emergency room in Delta, but no one knew what was happening to me. I couldn't talk. I was paralyzed. My arms and legs were paralyzed. And encephalitis, which is a brain swelling, had kicked in. Took about 4 or 5 days for them to diagnose West Nile. And from then on, I really have been on a 9-month journey of trying to get healed and trying to feel better. So I ended up in the hospital in Delta, then in the hospital in Montrose. From there, I went to a nursing home from mid-September up to the end of December. So I was in Horizons Nursing Home in Eckerd, and because I needed a lot of care, needed a lot of support. But since then, I've been home with a wonderful wife of a caregiver, and we've lots of physical therapy, lots of occupational therapy, just a tremendous amount of work. Just now starting to be able to walk a little bit, like 10 or 15 feet in a row, and drove my old truck for the first time yesterday, so...
What's the prognosis? Will you regain the ability to walk completely?
Yeah, typically it takes 12 to 18 months to recover from this level of severity of West Nile. And you get a lot of your brain functioning back, which is good because I kind of depend on the old noggin there. We have been pretty optimistic that I'll get at least 80, 90% of my motor skills back and maybe even more.
What was it like all that time when you were in the hospital and in the nursing home, and what kind of skills were you trying to regain?
The time in the nursing home was kind of a blur. In fact, I don't remember a lot of it, to be honest with you. But it's living in a bed, and so it was pretty boring, but family and friends, I have lots of cousins, and people would come visit me, and my arms and legs were paralyzed for the first month or so. And then I started to regain some use of them. But it's pretty typical of severe West Nile to get that level of paralysis. And then, of course, what's going on with your brain and swelling and all that, and your facilities begin to disappear. Your memory really goes. And I have no memory of 3 months before I got sick. And I don't remember really much until about mid-November. But that's very typical of this disease when it's at a severe level.
There's a test to diagnose West Nile?
There is. It's a virus, and it's in your system, and it creates antibodies. And the antibodies are picked up by tests that are looking for that. And they could positively say that this is West Nile. Scary stuff, though.
Yeah.
Very, very scary.
No doubt.
Scary for the family. The one doctor felt like I may not live through the night, the first night I was there. So that's how severe it was. And honestly, I never knew that West Nile could do this to you. I live on irrigated land up above Paonia. And, you know, I used eucalyptus lemon mosquito repellent because I didn't like DEET. And I did a lot of things wrong out of ignorance. Maybe I ignored all the good public health announcements, but I did things like I fed hundreds of birds a day. I love birds. And
so why is feeding birds a bad thing in terms of West Nile?
Birds are the number one carrier of West Nile disease. And what happens is birds are very mobile, of course, all over the area. And a bird is bitten by a mosquito, and then they can transmit that to us. I had screens in the house that had a few holes in them here and there. You know, I was careful, but not super careful. We had some standing water on the property, old irrigation ditches that really needed filled in. We've done all that stuff now.
Yeah.
Because there's really a debate over, once you've had West Nile, can you get it again? And the CDC says, no, you can't. My own doctor says, yes, you can. So it really, you know, we have to be extremely careful of what repellent you're using and when you use it. And
so no more lemon eucalyptus?
No. Well, actually, lemon eucalyptus is fairly effective, but I'm using DEET, which is the most effective. There are just key things you've got to do. Like you wear long sleeve shirts. You don't go outside in the dawn to dusk period where the mosquito that carries West Nile is most active, and that's the Culex, C-U-L-A-E-X mosquito. You've just got to be very, very careful, which is what I'm doing now. So.
And is that Culex mosquito one that's native to Western Colorado?
No, it was introduced. The first case of West Nile was in Florida in 1999, and it has spread nationwide, the mosquito has. And will very shortly be in every state. Colorado was one of the first states to get large-scale infections up in the Fort Collins area, had a number of deaths. And so we're, you know, it's really coming. It will be a very common thing nationwide very soon.
I understand a lot of people can have West Nile sometimes without even really knowing it.
According to the best research on West Nile, the majority of people, if they get anything, it's a very mild flu-like feeling. It's debated how many can get really severe West Nile and how many will actually die from it. We've had deaths in this area. We've had a half dozen or so deaths in Delta County over the last 10-plus years. So, but most people don't even know they have it. It's just a little tiny thing. But for the elderly, I'm 68 now. I was 67 when I went down. And the very young who have any autoimmune problems, anything like that, they're at much greater risk.
I understand you formed a group to help educate people about West Nile and provide support for people who fall ill with it. What motivated you to do that?
We know from the Department of Public Health, who I've talked with a fair amount now, and they've been really, really good to work with, that it's serious. And our county is one of the ones that was one of the initial counties that things got serious in. And we really decided, myself and someone, a family member whose husband had died of West Nile, we decided we got to do something. And I'm an old hippie activist from way back when. And we said, let's find out who's out there, who's had it this severe or had a family member die. So we put on Facebook different message boards, I'm looking for people. And they started to come out of the woodwork. I ended up with 13 people, mostly North Fork Valley and Rogers Mesa area. What we did is we got a group of people together in my living room, and we said, what would a plan look like to do public education and then help change behavior? What would it look like if it were done to build on all the good work that's been done by the Mosquito District, by the Department of Health? And we formed a campaign. And the critical thing about a campaign is you raise awareness, but you're trying to change behavior. Right? You're trying to get that standing water gone, get people to understand what they have to do in terms of protecting themselves and the community. We're doing things like providing public speakers for anyone who wants it. We'll be doing that, but getting information out there. Our group is now looking at, what do we do about other concerns? I interviewed a bunch of people who called me after the Delta County Independent did an article on our group and what we were doing. And my phone number was in the article, and people just started calling. One person called and said, I got it sick. I'm a farm worker. I had no money. I had no resources. I had no insurance. And I went from the hospital right home paralyzed. I couldn't move. What do you do? So one of our concerns is, how do we, as a group, who've been there, done that, how do we provide support once we're healed and feeling better? How do we provide support to others, particularly those who don't have the resources of, you know, me? I have friends that take me to appointments. I have everything I need is done by my wife and all of this network of relatives and friends. But what about people without that? So we're concerned about that, and we're going to put a plan together to provide that kind of support.
Are you getting funding from somewhere?
No. This is all volunteer. We don't want to set up a 501c3 not-for-profit. We really just want to bring victims, people that have survived this, and families of those that have passed from it. We want to bring them together with Mosquito Districts and with the Department of Public Health and come together in a coalition to really prevent this. It's really a pretty horrible disease.
Is there a number people can call to connect with your group?
970-270-8692. That's my contact information. And then if you follow any of the Facebook message boards in the area, you'll also see my posts on there. You can message me from there as well.
And again, we're speaking with John Vandenberg, who survived a pretty severe bout of West Nile this last fall. John, is there anything more that you want to tell people about West Nile, about prevention, about how they can avoid getting sick?
Absolutely. I think the key thing is to don't underestimate this. This is a killer. It takes, you know, like it's now taken 9 months plus and will likely take a year to year and a half of any normalcy in my own life. I think to people understand, yes, most people don't get affected this bad. But when you do, it's really, really serious. The other thing I would say is it's preventable. I mean, you can't control every mosquito in the North Fork Valley, but we know with proper prevention, we can really decrease the number of severe illnesses and deaths from this. So I think we're lucky in that we got a good mosquito board. We've got a Department of Public Health who's aware of what's going on. And now we have a group of people who've been there, done that, to help advocate for really effective prevention. So I'm very excited about that.
If you've just tuned in, this is Local Motion, and we're talking about West Nile virus and mosquitoes. Next, we'll hear from Heidi Dragoo, who leads the epidemiology program at Mesa County Public Health, talking about the risks of West Nile. I asked her about the rate at which the virus occurs on the western slope and what the trends are over time.
Yeah, looking at the numbers over the past 6 years, going back to 2013, we've seen pretty steady, like we had a really high 2013 where we had 27 cases reported in western Colorado, and then saw a couple years of lower numbers, and then last year, 2018, was another big year for us where we had 20 reported human cases of West Nile virus. 8 of those were in Delta County. We had 8 in Montrose and we had 2 in Mesa County.
And if you have a case of West Nile and it seems like you recover from it, is this an illness that can recur later?
Once you've had it, you then have, you know, immunity for your lifetime. Now, I think in some of those rare cases where folks have a more severe course of illness, it is possible that they have some longer-term effects from that. So they might continue to experience, like, intermittent joint pain or, you know, numbness. And so sometimes that can persist for months after the initial infection. But I would say that's very rare.
I understand there's also a form of West Nile that affects horses, and in horses there is a vaccine available. And so why is there a vaccine for horses but not one for humans?
You know, I know that horse vaccine has been around for some time, and I know that there's interest in trying to come up with some kind of vaccine for West Nile virus in humans, but as far as the details about why it works in horses and why it doesn't in people, I can't speak to that.
Is it important for people to actually get tested if they're, you know, if they come down with an illness and suspect that it might be West Nile?
I would say yes and no. You know, for most people who get West Nile, they're not going to show any signs or symptoms. So for them, you know, it's kind of a non-issue.
Right.
But I think anytime you are acutely sick with something, you know, we always right off the bat recommend seeking, you know, medical advice. So check in with your healthcare provider and, you know, depending on what you're showing up with, they'll either decide to order that test or not. And usually that's a decision we leave up to the providers. But if they're pretty suspicious, if they see the symptoms and they're like, this is unusual, you know, then certainly testing is appropriate. Typically, treatment is just what we call supportive. So mm-hmm. it's resting at home, it's staying well hydrated, you know, drinking lots of fluids, and just really taking that time for your body to recover.
What I'd like to do is put the risk of West Nile in context. You know, how worried should they be about West Nile? I mean,
certainly it's not as, you know, infectious, if you will, as, you know, something like measles, which we're hearing a lot about right now in the news. But I think given our location in Western Colorado, given our active outdoor lifestyle, you know, all of those reasons why many of us choose to make Western Colorado home, we certainly are more at risk than, you know, maybe some other parts of the U.S. And so I do think it's something that folks should be mindful of, especially going into the summer season. You know, as you spend time outside, you know, making sure that you're taking those appropriate steps to prevent mosquito bites. A couple of things you can do, you know, is make sure that you are wearing insect repellent that is appropriate for preventing mosquito bites. You can also take steps in and around your home to really reduce standing water, so to get rid of those places where mosquitoes can lay eggs and hatch. I mean, when I think about other diseases spread by insects, you know, we also have ticks here in Western Colorado, mm-hmm. and the ticks around here can carry some really horrible diseases like Rocky Mountain spotted fever and tularemia, and certainly those, you know, if we think about severity of disease, both of those are significantly worse than West Nile. The great thing is all of those insect repellents that I mentioned, those active ingredients, all of those are also effective against ticks. So I think it's good practice to just protect yourself when you're out and about to not only fight the mosquito bites, but also the tick bites.
And that was Heidi Dragoo, Mesa County Public Health Epidemiologist. In Mesa County, the Grand Valley Mosquito Control District covers Grand Junction, Palisade, Fruta, and irrigated land in the Grand Valley, combating mosquitoes with larvicide and spray. Delta County also controls mosquitoes in some areas, as do the towns of Olathe, Montrose, and Ridgeway. Next, we'll hear from Rain Klepper, the president of the North Fork Mosquito Abatement District, discussing some of the challenges of mosquito control.
We are dealing with the Culex pipiens and Culex tarsalis that carry West Nile virus. And West Nile virus can be very virulent. How do you interrupt that cycle where a single female mosquito can lay up to 200 eggs, 300 eggs every 3 to 5 days, all the way through the season? So part of what we ended up doing is revamping the entire operations plan. First off, to search out the breeding areas. What type of larvicidal products, which are environmentally friendly, do not hurt predator species like dragonflies, damselflies, bees of all sorts, none of them are injured by anything that we're doing. There's no actual environmental impact that is, you know, devastating like the old organophosphates, like malathion. The federal government changed what could happen with mosquito control districts to the point that we are no longer in the state of Colorado allowed to spray malathion. So the first aim, and really the most important thing for us, has been find the places where the adult mosquitoes are hatching and destroy it. Our crew is out there with shovels and backpacks, backhoes, track hoes. So before they're ever flying, we're killing the mosquitoes.
So what should people do to protect themselves from getting bitten?
The first thing, and one of the most important things, light-colored clothing, If you can't avoid being out at dusk, long sleeves, long pants, using appropriate repellents. I mean, we have a Facebook page, NFMAD, and on the website, nfmad.org, where basically we have put entire listings of really excellent mosquito repellents. 10% to 30% DEET basically is the absolute fail safe. Use a DEET repellent, and if you are afraid about it, put it on the outside of your clothes. You can put it on the collar of your shirt, you can put it on the cuff, on the outside of your pants, on the top of your hat, so it will repel the mosquitoes away from you. DEET products should never be used with children, especially under the age of 8.
Even on their clothing?
They'll say, well, I wouldn't even do it on the clothing. You know, especially there's other products called Picaridin, and again, it's on the website. They're all spelled out, really excellent products that you can use with babies up to age 5, 6 years old is what they'll tell you on the label. I would stretch that really up until about the age of 8 or 9. And non-DEET, the groovy, you know, pennyroyal, citronella, rosemary oil, you know, oil of lemon eucalyptus. There's a lot of these various different products. They are very useful. And yes, they have efficacy. But they have to be reapplied, sometimes every hour. You know, really schedule yourself in such a way that you are not outside in prone areas by rivers, by water, you know, those types of things at dusk. Dusk and dawn, there are two worst times.
What is the extent of the area that the
North Fork District
covers?
Bowie, you know, it's like areas around Bowie all the way down to parts of Hotchkiss. What we're really trying to do more than anything is drain the swamp. The enemy of mosquito control is standing water. If you've heard, I'm sure, about Fight the Bite. Everybody looks at Fight the Bite, you know, to look at bird baths that haven't been changed or plants on your patio, things various on that level that are personal standing water. Tops of pool covers are a good example. But really what we're faced with in the North Fork is irrigation tailwater. All the whole ditch system that we have irrigating and making it possible for all of our agriculture to happen is the enemy of mosquito control.
And how much of Delta County does not have any mosquito control?
From the town of Hotchkiss all the way to the town of Delta, district's boundary have zero mosquito control. Our district boundaries are not respected by the mosquitoes. The Crawford Reservoir, 4 of the 6 cases verified by lab that were in the North Fork District in 2018 were people who got the bites at the Crawford Reservoir. It's one of the reasons I've recently been writing a series of letters asking their town council and their mayor, would they please discuss options with us? We are too underfunded to be able to take on the entire town of Crawford.
So what's the solution to that? How can mosquito control be expanded to all of Delta County?
I keep asking the Board of County Commissioners. They just shudder when they see me coming. You know, to form a 3rd and 4th mosquito district. I think that the town of Crawford needs to get it on a ballot. The residents of Rogers Mesa are going to have to demand of local government to help form a special district, which will have to happen through an election. Part of the difficulty is mosquito control also has a very colorful history in this valley. There's a lot of fear and a lot of misinformation. People are worried if they become part of the mosquito district, any mosquito district, not just the North Fork, but would that give us access to be able to put chemicals on their property or take away their organic certification, you know, without them having a choice? And nothing could be further from the truth. No matter what we do, I mean, you could drop a nuclear bomb and the mosquitoes would still be here because they would be getting blown in from the place that hadn't been affected. Everybody needs to be aware that the risk of contracting West Nile is very high all over the country, not just here in the North Fork District. It's actually pretty clear here compared to Fort Collins, Boulder County, even areas, you know, in Utah, southern Utah, most of Arizona, most of New Mexico, their risk is many tens of hundreds of percentage points higher than here. But our risk is real. This is not a zero by any stretch of the imagination. We ask residents, please, 527-6681. Please call us. If you see adult mosquitoes, if you're experiencing mosquitoes on your property, if you were at an event and you started seeing a lot of adult mosquitoes at dusk, we need an army of citizens to report.
And that was Rain Klepper of the North Fork Mosquito Abatement District. Today on Local Motion, we're talking about mosquito control and about the diseases mosquitoes can carry, especially West Nile. To wrap things up, I asked Dr. Tim Weingard for some big picture perspective. Tim is a professor of history and political science at Colorado Mesa University and has a new book coming out in August called The Mosquito, A Human History of Our Deadliest Predator.
The mosquito, more than any other outside factor, has shaped our history more than any other animal or agent that we share our earth with. From deciding the American Revolution to Alexander the Great's campaign in India was halted by malarious mosquitoes. The Mongol invasion of Europe was stopped by malarious mosquitoes along the Danube River. And in the U.S., obviously, she helped decide this American Revolution and forced Cornwallis' surrender at Yorktown, as well as deciding the Civil War. So globally, there's roughly 110 trillion mosquitoes on the planet at any given time. Given that the mosquito has killed 52 billion of the 108 billion Homo sapiens that have ever lived, I just thought that the historical impact of that sheer volume of death must be overwhelming. The fascinating story and journey of how this tiny animal has shaped our history more than I think we appreciate or give her credit, I suppose, for. Throughout human history, the mosquito and obviously the diseases that she is, only females bite, have transmitted to humans throughout our history and our pre-human history as hominids. Malaria has been around with our line at least for 8 million years, have been historic game changers as far as changing the course and steering the course of human history. And the two biggest diseases of the more than 15 diseases that the mosquito transmits have been malaria and yellow fever. And now, thankfully, annually roughly 45,000 people still die of yellow fever. And malaria is upwards of 1 million to 2 million a year that perish from malaria. So in a historical context, obviously, West Nile 1 is a relatively new mosquito-borne disease entering the animal kingdom as a distinct virus roughly about 1,000 years ago, and certainly documented in humans for the first time in the 1940s. And made its way to the United States and Canada the United States in 1999, and then spread quickly throughout the United States and Canada. But it is, West Nile's not a historic killer compared to especially other mosquito-borne diseases, specifically yellow fever and malaria. As I said, West Nile first appears in the United States in 1999, and since that time there has been roughly 2,300 deaths from West Nile. So when you compare that to other mosquito-borne diseases, it's relatively low. And some of these diseases are becoming an emerging threat with global warming. As temperatures increase, mosquito species have broadened their range, both in altitude and also away from the equator to the north and south. So, for example, the United States has witnessed its first domestic cases of dengue, Zika, and chikungunya in Texas and Florida, and West Nile is obviously pervasive throughout the United States. So it's becoming a hot topic as of late with global warming and then the spread of mosquito-borne diseases into untapped places that have previously been void of disease-carrying species or the diseases themselves.
Are there any particular diseases that seem to be headed towards Western Colorado?
The bright mosquito species are here to promote or spread vector more diseases other than West Nile. So there's, they call it California serogroup viruses, which include Jamestown Canyon, which actually is named after Jamestown, Colorado, is another mosquito-borne disease that's making its way across both the United States and as far north into Newfoundland in Canada. Snowshoe hare virus. So they're relatively benign cousins of West Nile. They can still make you sick. So we're seeing an increase in not only types of mosquito-borne disease in the United States, as I said, with the introduction of domestic cases of Zika, chikungunya, and dengue. We're seeing new mosquito-borne diseases spread their horizons across both the United States and obviously into Canada as well.
Is there anything you could do to make yourself personally less attractive to mosquitoes?
Staying extremely stinky.
Yeah?
Yeah, except your feet. So definitely deodorants, soaps, applied fragrances all attract mosquitoes. Wash your feet. The bacteria on your feet that causes essentially stinky feet is the same that is used to ripen and rind cheeses, and that's a mosquito aphrodisiac. So clean feet, but stinky everywhere else. As I said, unless you can change your blood type, mosquitoes prefer blood type O over A and B, or their blend. But as they say in the book, 85% of what makes you appealing to mosquitoes is hardwired in your genetic circuit board, whether that's blood type, the amount of lactic acid and bacteria in and on your skin, the amount of carbon dioxide that people respire naturally, temperature, your natural body odor, all attracts mosquitoes or deters mosquitoes. At the end of the day, everybody gets bitten, some more than others, but she will find that the one exposed Achilles heel, if you will, and find it. So it's just, and everyone around the world shares the agony and pain of mosquitoes.
And that was Dr. Tim Weingard of Colorado Mesa University. And that concludes this episode of Local Motion. You can find it on our website, kvnf.org, along with all the weekly programs. For KVNF, I'm Jody Peterson.